16th, 2012 in Soho, and we're going to be reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 5, text 33, an astonishing verse, because one may think that spiritual life means that you give up everything material. People think that way, right? Change your tea with a fancy lid on me. So somebody asked me the other day, can I be Krishna conscious if I want to have a car? So we may think like that. We may think that spiritual life means I don't do anything, I don't want anything, I don't be anything, I'm just kind of nothing. So Narad Muni, a great sage, speaks this amazing verse. Amayo yas chabutanam jayate ye nasuvrata tad eva yamayam dravyam na punati chikikchitam. O good soul, does not a thing, when applied therapeutically, cure a disease which was caused by that very same thing? And of course, there's a whole medical science devoted to this principle. But this applies, say, for snake venom. You know, if you get bitten by a snake, the cure is you have to get an antidote from the same venom. Or nowadays, we get vaccinated. They give you a changed form of polio so you don't get polio. And Srila Prabhupada talks about here, if you drink too much milk, then you may have a disturbance in your bowels, but if you eat yogurt, it will cure it. So the same thing, does not a thing, when applied therapeutically, cure a disease which is caused by that very same thing. So what is causing our disease here is wanting to work for ourselves. We're going to go on and read the next few verses. I'll read a little bit of these purports. Prabhupada says, the threefold miseries of material existence. Does everyone know what the threefold miseries are? What are they? Yes, from the body. This, we have a demonstration of one of them here. Thank you very much. So, the miseries of the body and the mind. Anxieties, diseases. All right, next misery is what? That's from my own body and my own mind, which should be my good friends, right? And they cause me so many miseries. All right. The next misery from?
Other
living entities. So barking dogs, mosquitoes, but even our own family. Who would ever have thought? Even our own friends. I was just talking to someone today. I thought if I worked with my friends, I thought if I had started a business with my friends, there'd be no more backstabbing. All right. And the third misery?
Nature.
From nature. So he says, the threefold miseries of material existence cannot be mitigated simply by material activities. The activities have to be spiritualized, just as by fire, iron is made red hot, and therefore the action of fire begins. Similarly, the material conception of a thing is at once changed as soon as it is put into the service of the Lord. That is the secret of spiritual success. What's the secret of spiritual... Would you all like to know the secret of spiritual success?
Yeah.
Does anyone remember what it was? I just read it.
No.
Or did you think, oh, she's reading something, we won't pay any attention. Okay, let's try that again. We all learned that in school, wasn't it? That whenever the teacher read, we could zone out. So we carried that into our adult life. Even though I try to read dramatically, it still doesn't work. Reading time. Okay, try again. The threefold miseries of material existence cannot be mitigated simply by material activities. Actually, Einstein said that. He said you cannot cure something with the same consciousness with which you created it. Such activities have to be spiritualized, just as fire iron is made red hot. We don't see that much in modern life. We don't see blacksmiths very often. You have to go to some old-fashioned village. They have those in this country?
Yeah.
Where people dress up like it was 100, 200 years ago. If you talk to them, they pretend that it's actually the other time. And you can go to the blacksmith shop. I mean, I'm sure there's still some blacksmith somewhere. But anyway, you can go to this blacksmith shop, and they're putting the iron in the fire, and it turns red. And if you were to touch that red iron to paper, it would burn. So just as by fire, iron is made red hot, and thereby the action of fire begins. Similarly, here it is. The material conception of a thing is at once changed as soon as it is put into the service of the Lord. That is the secret of spiritual success. So what's the secret? Use everything in the service of the Lord, and then the material conception of a thing is at once changed. We should not try to lord it over the material nature, nor should we reject material things. Everything is an emanation from the Supreme Spirit, and by his inconceivable power, he can convert spirit into matter and matter into spirit. Therefore, a material thing, so-called, is at once turned into a spiritual force by the great will of the Lord. The necessary condition for such a change is to employ so-called matter in the service of the spirit. That is the way to treat our material diseases. He doesn't just mean colds and flu and ketzer. By material diseases, Prabhupada means the conception of things as being separate from Krishna, and elevate ourselves to the spiritual plane where there is no misery, no lamentation, and no fear. When everything is thus employed in the service of the Lord, we can experience that there is nothing except the supreme Brahman. Brahman means spirit. The Vedic mantra that everything is Brahman is thus realized by us. So Srila Prabhupada's talking here about a way, if we use material things in the service of Krishna, then they cease to be material. They cease to act materially. Okay, we're going to go on to read just a few verses here. Thus, when all a person's activities are dedicated to the service of the Lord, those very activities which cause his perpetual bondage become the destroyer of the tree of work. So the very things that keep us in this law of karma and reincarnation, that tie us to these miseries, that have us see things as this is material, this is spiritual, all of our conflicts, that can at once be stopped by the same activities done differently. Next verse. Whatever work is done here in this life for the satisfaction of the mission of the Lord is called bhakti yoga, or transcendental loving service to the Lord, and what is called knowledge becomes a concomitant factor. By knowledge here, the Bhagavatam doesn't mean knowing where Latvia is, although that's useful. We're not denying that that's useful. Or knowing, which I messed up today, which is why I was late, knowing how to get from here to there in central London. I took the wrong turn. So that's not what the Bhagavatam means by knowledge. What it means is transcendental knowledge, seeing everything as it is. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
So that's just a concomitant factor of bhakti. It's not that first you have to attain transcendental knowledge and then you can engage in bhakti. No, if you engage in bhakti, transcendental knowledge will come naturally. We'll go on to the last verse here I'm going to read. While performing duties according to the order of Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one constantly remembers him, his names, and his qualities. A little bit of the purport. An expert devotee of the Lord can mold his life in such a way that while performing all kinds of duties, either for this or the next life, for this life, that's like brushing your teeth. You're not doing that for the next life. You have different teeth. Brushing these teeth will not help next life's teeth. Okay? And some of the things we're doing for the next life. So whether it's for this life or for the next life, because sometimes we think, the things I'm doing for this life, they're material. And what I'm doing for the next life, that's spiritual. Whether it's for this life or for the next life, he can constantly remember the Lord's name, fame, qualities, etc. So this bhakti yoga process is so simple. I mean, doing it is sometimes a little difficult because we're used to doing things materially. But the idea of bhakti yoga is very, very easy. The concept is easy to understand. Material means I don't see the relationship with Krishna. That's it. That's what material means. Material is the illusion that myself and the other things in this, all the things in this world are separate from Krishna, separate from each other. Things, you know, this is me and this is you and I have my interests and you have your interests and God's a little part of my life for a couple hours a week and that's illusion. It's not that the things are illusion. Of course, they're illusion in the sense that they're temporary. They're illusion in the sense that they really are something different than what they appear to be. Like Tattvavi Prabhu gave the example the other day that the ceiling looks like the sky, but it's not actually the sky, it's actually a ceiling. So it exists as a ceiling, but the idea that it's a sky is an illusion. So the idea that this is a book stand and this is a microphone, I mean, we can use it like that temporarily, but it's not its eternal identity. So in that sense also, there's an illusion. But the main illusion is that things are separate from Krishna. That's the main illusion. And coming to truth is saying that everything is ultimately spirit. It's kind of interesting because one of the first things that we teach in the Hare Krishna movement is there's a difference between matter and spirit. Your spirit and your body is matter. But the next step up is to understand that really everything is spiritual. Even the body is ultimately Krishna's spiritual energy. Everything is Krishna's energy. And every part of Krishna's energy, in the ultimate sense, is spiritual. Material energy means that energy by which you think the spiritual is material. Did you all get that?
Yeah.
By which you think, you know, here's this kind of person, here's a man, here's a woman, here's an old person, here's a young person. That's who they are. They're a material being that's born, that gets old, that dies. Here's matter that I can do with as I like, I can manipulate as I like. The reality is, it's all Krishna's energy, it's all divine. Krishna talks about Maya, Daiviyeshad Hunamayi, Mama Maya Dharatiya, it's my divine energy. Therefore, these miseries of life, they only exist when we see things as separate from Krishna. So I've given this example before, just like in a dance. Sometimes there's a dance with many dancers dancing together in a harmonious, synchronized way. It's very beautiful. So let's say one of the dancers decides, well, I'm going to just do my own dance. So what would happen? There would immediately be conflict. There would be conflict between that dancer and the other dancers. They'd be bumping into each other. And the person doing that, they might get bruised. They might even fall off the stage. Right? So this nature is Krishna's energy. Other living entities are part and parcel of Krishna. My body and mind, they're also Krishna. Bhumirapanalobayukambano buddhir evacha. But if I'm thinking, no, this body belongs to me. This mind belongs to me. I can do with it as I like. And other people, they have separate interests from me. Some of them are helping me with my interests, some of them are hurting me with my interests. I have friends and enemies, and then I have neutral people who don't know me, don't care. So I divide the world up into this. Those are my friends, those are the neutral people, those are the enemies. Let me keep my friends, and see if I can turn my enemies into friends. If I can't, let me neutralize my enemies. And then I look at different objects. These objects please me, these objects don't please me. So that's all false, and that puts me, because it's false, it puts me into conflict with everything. Because I'm seeing my body and mind as my body and my mind instead of Krishna's body and Krishna's mind and Krishna's energy. Therefore, I have a conflict with it, and therefore I suffer. Because I see other living entities in terms of friends and enemies instead of seeing that we're all part and parcel of Krishna. We're all of the same spiritual quality. We're all of the same spiritual family. Actually, everyone has the same interests of serving Krishna. Then I come into conflict with other living entities. And because I see nature is meant for my enjoyment, or a sunny day, that's meant for my enjoyment. The rain giving water to the crops, that's for my enjoyment. Therefore, I'm in conflict with nature. So all of these miseries come from falsely seeing myself as the center and seeing things as separate from Krishna. And as soon as I see things in relationship to Krishna, then I see that everything is perfectly done. And then even when there's external difficulties, even if the body gets sick or it's cold and raining, or even if somebody does something that's not very nice to me, I'm not affected by it because I'm not thinking this is me. Something like if you are in an electronic shop and they're selling televisions and you see some movie playing and you just walk past it and in the movie somebody's shooting somebody else, but it doesn't bother you because you're not watching the movie. You're not identifying with it. You're not trying to enjoy it. Therefore, it has no meaning to you. Oh, somebody's shooting somebody on a screen. So what? So one who understands that I'm spiritual and this is all Krishna's energy, they're not affected by the things in this world. Now, that doesn't mean life is boring. You know, sometimes people would think, well, hey, I'd rather be affected. Because if I'm unaffected, I'll just be sort of in this neutral, you know. I mean, maybe material life with all of its concomitant miseries is more exciting than just floating. And you can do it for a while. You go to Tahiti and just float in the ocean. And after a while, you want to come back to London again. Right, I got an email from someone who lives here, who's in some a nice rural place right now visiting relatives in another part of the world, and they said, I miss all the excitement of central London. Just like when I visited Trinidad, which is a Caribbean island, tropical island. And when I got off the plane, they gave me a gift, really carefully wrapped. And they said, this is a really special gift for you. And I opened it up. It was a red delicious apple. He said, you know, that costs about $5 here in Trinidad for one apple. And I said, I was hoping to get mangoes. They said, mangoes? They're rotting on the side of the street. So in Trinidad, they were thinking we want to go to New York. They said, can we go to New York? And in New York, I said, there's signs. Go to the Caribbean and enjoy. So we may think that, you know, if I'm transcendental to everything, if I'm not affected to by anything, that'll just be boring. It might be nice as a vacation. But Bhakti Yoga is not teaching that being transcendental to everything just means floating. It means you're absorbed in the actual reality. And in the actual reality, there's form, there's activities, there's personality of infinite variety forever. So one is transcendent to the material miseries because one's absorbed in a higher reality. So how to do this practically? This all sounds nice and theoretical and perhaps, hopefully, intriguing. How to do it is so easy. You just take what you're already doing and do it for Krishna. Prabhupada said Krishna consciousness is not narrow or stereotyped. I mean, there's a few things you can't do for Krishna. Not many. You can't be a heroin dealer for Krishna. I'm sorry. So those of you who are heroin dealers, I'm really sorry to disappoint you. That you can't do. You can't run a strip club for Krishna. You know, a few things. So anything having to do with eating wheat, fish, or eggs, intoxication, illicit sex, or gambling. So that, if you're running a casino, you have to change your job. But other than those things, of course, maybe in London, that's like all there is. I don't know. Other than those things, whatever talents, whatever abilities we have, whatever propensities we have, whatever kind of personality we have, use that for Krishna. how do you do that? I mean, people sometimes think, well, doing that means that I have to give up everything and just move into the ashram. We wouldn't even have room for all of you here. We'll have to buy another building. They think using things for Krishna, or as Prabhupada said, actually said in the verse, for the mission of the Lord, that means everybody just has to work on selling Prabhupada's books and distributing prasadam. I run into this misconception all the time. But Krishna's mission is very broad. So you just think of it this way. You ready? It's really easy. Okay? I'm an employee in Krishna's company. So Krishna, God, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he runs a business. He's the company president. You know what his product is?
Love.
Love. He sells love. Actually, he often just gives it away. At least he'll give away free samples. So we're in the business of selling love of God, and anybody can become his employee. In fact, we're all naturally his employee. We already have a place. We already have a little name tag and an ID card. We just have to go and get it. It's already there. It's there eternally. It never goes away. And we just take up our role in Krishna's company. And then everything we're doing, from combing our hair, to feeding our kids, to riding on the tube to go to work, doesn't matter. To going to university, you just think, I'm here on a mission. I work for Krishna's company. He's my boss. Now, he pays a nice salary. Sometimes we think that if you're a devotee of Krishna, you shouldn't be working for a salary. But Krishna himself, when he comes as a devotee, he says he wants a salary. Do you all know that? So that's Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If you're not familiar, the small little altar in the middle, there, on the right side, on our right, is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's Krishna in the role of his own devotee. Because it's so much fun to worship Krishna, he likes to do it himself. He's not asking us to do something that's not good. He does it too, and he likes it. So he had a request. He said, Prema dana bina vyarte daridra divana dasa kori beta mori deha prema dana. So, are there any Bengalis here?
Any Bengalis?
One, okay. Two. So I'm sorry for really butchering your language. I'm really terrible. But did I say betan right? Betan. Did I say that?
Salary.
Betan is a salary. So he said, dasa kori betan mori deha prema dana. Prema dana bina, that means without, dana means wealth. Prema means love. Prema dana bina, and again, please excuse what I'm doing to your beautiful language. Prema dana bina, without the wealth of love, vyarta. Arta is a goal. Arta can also mean wealth, but it's a goal. Something that's valuable. Vyarta is useless. Daridra, you know what daridra means?
Poor.
Jivana?
Life.
So without the wealth of love, life is useless and poor. Dasa kori betan mori. I want to be your servant. I want to be your employee. Betan mori, and I want a salary. Deha premadani. Please give me the salary of love. So just like people who work for a restaurant, sometimes they get to eat the food there as part of their salary. So we're Krishna's employees. And we get paid also in love. And of course we get provided. Krishna provides his employees with whatever they need, even materially. Yogakshema Bahamyaham. So whatever we need, even vacations. A good employer, he makes sure that people get enough to live on so they can concentrate on their work. They don't need to worry about their living condition, make sure they have birthday parties and vacations and proper facility for work. So Krishna is a very good employer, and he provides very nicely. So then we see whatever is given to me in my life, wherever I'm living, whether it's a part of a room in the Brahmacharya ashram or a huge mansion out in the country, Whatever clothes I have, whether it's a few dhotis or a closet full of so many things, I only wear one thing every 6 months. You know, whatever family and friends we have, whatever talents and abilities we have, whatever electronic equipment we have, whatever vehicles we have, whatever health, intelligence, talents, abilities we have, anything we have, this is Krishna taking care of me. He's my employer, and he's taking care of me. The government's not taking care of me. My husband, my father, my mother, my uncle, my aunt, my wife, my children, they're not taking care of me. Krishna's taking care of me. I work for him. My business is simply, what's my business? What am I selling?
Love.
Love of God. What's my salary?
Love
of God. And everything else is given to me so I can do my job. All this other facility, it's given to me by the kindness of my employer so I can do my job. I might think, I'm working at the bank. You're not working at the bank for money. You're working for Krishna. And whatever money you get for the bank, guess who's really giving that to you? Krishna. What's your real business at the bank? What's your real business?
Selling love
of God. Now, that doesn't mean that necessarily you go to everybody at the bank and say, hey, would you like to love God today? You have to be very clever how to sell love of God. Because you're not just selling it, you're marketing it. Right? You've got to market something in an area where there's not such a demand. Right? So one has to be very intelligent. And then everyone we're dealing with, whether they're apparently our bosses in this world, or our colleagues, or our husband, or our wife, or our children, our mother, and father, and aunt, and uncle, our friends, and enemies, and neutral, and government officials, and whoever else we deal with, and shopkeepers, they're actually all either our suppliers of love of God, our co-workers in selling love of God, or our customers, or potential customers. And what am I supposed to bring to Krishna's company? My best talents. I'm supposed to say, okay, let's see. How can I possibly sell more love of God? What do I have to contribute to this company? What talents and abilities has Krishna given me? Let me use that for him. Then our whole life becomes spiritual. And then the very things that have entangled us will free us. And one more thing. While we're going through our activities, we remember Krishna. Just like people out fighting for the country, they're thinking about, I'm fighting for my country. Some ordinary person at their job, they're thinking, I'm doing this for my family. I've spent time in the Middle East, and there, about 80% of the people in places like Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Bahrain, Qatar, Oman, about 80% of the people there are foreigners. They're mostly men. Either they're single or they're away from their families. Sometimes they're away from their families 4, 5, 6 years. And most of them are from India, Bangladesh, Pakistan. I mean, it's interesting. You can drive for half an hour, you don't see any women. Because 80% of the countries are men, but they're foreigners. So there are people there, they have their families back in, you know, Pakistan or Bangladesh. And they're working, and all the time they're working, and they're often working in not very nice conditions. They actually call the places where they stay labor camps. Ouch. So they're staying in these, you know, it's really not very nice. And they're working really, really hard and living very austerely and sending money back to their family. And they, sometimes, as I said, I don't see their family for 4, 5, 6 years. So, you know, if you leave a 2-year-old child, you come back and they're 6 or 7. And they're always meditating on their families. So in the same way, we should always meditate on Krishna. Krishna's name, Krishna's form, Krishna's activities. At least, meditate on Krishna's kindness to us, everything he's given us to do his work. Meditate on how Krishna is the light of the sun and the moon, How he joins with the air of life, digests our foodstuffs, is our ability, is our intelligence, is anything that's great and wondrous and splendorous. At least that. But try to meditate actually on his form, and he has such a beautiful form. And therefore, we have this deity worship. And you can see how he's always dancing. Right? Dancing. He likes music and dance. He's a party boy. He's called, he is. What to do? And he's called Dira Lalita. And he's always engaged. It says in the Bhagavatam. I mean, I'm not making this up. It says it in the Bhagavatam. People have all kinds of gods that they worship, you know, all kinds of conceptions of God. So I remember being given a little Christian tract. And you know, this isn't coming from Jesus, it's coming from modern day Christians. We're not criticizing Jesus here. And they show this big, faceless god, looks like he's wearing a business suit. And there's these little ant-like people, you know, at the bottom of his big throne, and he's just sitting there with no face. And they have this big screen, this is your life. I mean, goodness, every day we do something wrong, isn't it? At least I do. Every day I make some mistake. What to speak of my whole life. You see your whole life there, all the mistakes you've made, all the people who you've offended. And then there's this big God. Okay? Heaven, hell, heaven, hell, you know? So that's not our idea of God. What boring. Why would you want to go there? You know, better to stay in London. Hang out with such a God. So our idea of God's not like that. He's always dancing. And he's always playing musical instruments, especially his flute. He's always having parties, picnics, and going swimming in crystal clear water and playing all kinds of games and sports. And he has all kinds, he even has scary adventures, although God never dies and never gets injured. So to think about that, how beautiful Krishna is, with his qualities, how he's the most beautiful, the most strong, the most famous, the most wise, the most renounced even. His wonderful activities, which one can read about in the scriptures. And in that way, our whole life becomes spiritual. Krishna says about the mode of goodness, that all the gates of the body become illumined by knowledge. And that's still on a material level. When one comes to spiritual life, all of one's life becomes illuminated. One may think such a person is in the material world. One may see, oh, they're going to university, they're going to work, they're washing the dishes and vacuuming the floors, but they're not. Just like Prabhupada says here, the piece of iron, when you put it in the fire, it acts like fire. So this is how one should spiritualize one's life. And in the beginning of this process, especially Prabhupada says in the beginning, to do this requires very expert guidance of a spiritual master. So to learn how to, because if you become an employee at a company, you need to learn the ropes, right? What are the rules, how to do things? What is the employer like? What are the company policies? So for that one needs some expert guidance. And we have all of our great acharyas who've written so many books, who Prabhupada has written so many books, and so many people here in the Hare Krishna movement who can also help to understand how to always think, I'm doing this for Krishna, I'm doing this for Krishna. My business for Krishna is to spread love of God. How wonderful Krishna is. How his ankle bells are tinkling as he walks. How his flute is making even the rocks melt and the rivers stand still. Let me do everything for this wonderful Krishna. So I think we're supposed to stop now so we can go on with the program. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.